It's a Genesis 9 text, which is the 26th of August. Is that right? 26th of July, I mean. Eighth Sunday after Pentecost. Okay, now we're oriented. Obviously, this goes with the gospel lesson. It's kind of interesting to have the end of the flood narrative show up. Genesis 9, verses 7 through 17 is the actual pericope. And maybe we'll make a few comments at the end, but this is paired with the gospel in Mark. We've been reading around in Mark in those sort of early chapters again, or middle chapters of Jesus' early ministry, with the stilling of the storm and that great punchline at the end, who is this that even wind and sea obey him? So obviously the theme here has to do with the Lord of our redemption coming and demonstrating himself also as the God of our creation, which is sort of the point of all the nature miracles, and healing miracles too for that matter, that in Jesus the Messianic age has come, a la Isaiah 35, probably most striking example, when the eyes of the blind shall be opened and all nature rejoices. Paul, of course, picks up this theme in Romans 8 with creation groaning still, but the first fruits of the new creation have come in Christ. So a lot of these Markan texts really have to do, you know, less with the fact of healing and more with the question of the identity of Jesus as the bringer of the Messianic age and the new creation that comes with Christ. A line I like to remind my Bible class, at the end of the day, it's always about Jesus. It's not about us, except that we get incorporated into the body of Christ in baptism. But it's really about Jesus, not about how I can get healed or how I can get more power and divine energy in my life, which is a lot of American prosperity gospel. Well, here we are in Genesis, and of course, we're kind of jumping into the middle of the flood story. In fact, we're jumping into the end of the flood story. Genesis 1 to 11 sort of has these two cycles of creation, fall, punishment, the flood really is the end of part one, God's destruction. And in chapter six, you sort of get the spread of sin from the fall of Adam and Eve and to the whole world being evil and corrupt, and then God punishing it through the destructive forces of the flood, when the Creator God essentially lets go. Much of creation, remember, is everything in its place, working the way it's supposed to work. And in some ways, the flood is not as proactive as it is simply God letting go and letting chaos reign. Windows of heaven are opened, and when the waters above are no longer separated from the waters below, and the land is no longer separated from the sea where the waters were collected and properly in their place, then you got chaos, and the flood is certainly sort of a reminder of the chaos that ensues when their Creator God, who created all things, also stops preserving all things and keeping things in their right place, which is all, of course, a result of the fall of all creation. So now we sort of start the second cycle, and the language of Genesis 9, the first verses, 1 through 7. In fact, there's a nice inclusio between verse 1 and verse 7 with the refrain of be fruitful and multiply is clearly kind of a restart. God, I've often said God pushes the restart button, and we start over again with the same command he gave in Genesis chapter 1, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Now it's up to not two people, but eight people that come forth from the ark. But again, that cycle of creation, fill the earth, the spread of God's people on the earth, but then interrupted by fall and the spread of sin and destruction is now repeated as well, because the story that follows this pericope is the sort of a story of, not sort of, the story of Noah's sort of fall and drunkenness. He kind of gets back into creation and decides it's for him instead of for servants to God and to others, and gets drunk, and then we have the fallout of all of that. And in a sense, the spread of sin then is displayed in the Table of Nations in Genesis chapter 10 and wrapped up in the Tower of Babel story. But what should follow in the sequence then is another grand destruction, sort of like the flood. Well, this pericope that we're studying today makes the point that no, God isn't going to do that anymore. This was a one-shot deal, at least to destroy the world by flood. There is another great destruction coming, but that's at the end of all time. And from now, the focus shifts not so much to God's destruction, though that's always sort of lurking in the background of law to gospel, but the end of this story, of the second cycle, does not end in a great destruction, but in a promise to Abraham. In fact, Genesis 12 doesn't really begin the next section as much as the end of chapter 11, where we turn to the genealogy of Abraham, and it sort of sets up the storyline of Abraham that then comes to fruition in the promise of Genesis chapter 12. So I'm just trying to place this one pericope into the larger narrative, if you will, of these early chapters of Genesis. But let's turn to the Hebrew and at least grind through the translation as we are wont to do. So verse 8, Vayomer Elohim, here it is the Elohim word for God, and I don't want to get into all the JEDP discussions, but the flood narrative is, of course, almost a textbook case for the documentary hypothesis, trying to sort out the sources and put them back together again. There is a sense in which Elohim is almost always the God in his more universal power and even sovereignty. So it's appropriate that God is the God of all creation and in this sense also destruction is described by Elohim and not Yahweh, even though we're talking about a covenant here. But the covenant is not so much a personal relationship with Noah, but it's the covenant with all creation. It's really a nature thing. Hey, as an aside, as long as I'm rambling, speaking of creation, and there's a lot in this passage that relates to this, I'd refer everyone, including especially our listeners, to Chuck Aaron's little article, not to mention a lot of the work he's doing with sort of ecology and what we might call the stewardship of God's creation. But that little article in Lutheran Witness in April, based on the statement in the Catechism that God has made me together with all creatures, affirming both the commonality of humanity with creation as well as the distinction between humanity and all creation. And here, I mean, part of God's covenant and promise to his people is also God's covenant and promise with creation, that this is part of who we are as me and all creatures, whom God created. Well, that was an aside. Let's get back to the text. Verse 8, Vayomer Elohim el Noach, that is, God said to Noah, and to Banau, his sons, ito, with him. This is it, not at the direct object marker, but with him. And in this sense, F2 is much more accompaniment with, those who are literally present with him, quote, saying, lay more, va'ani hinani, Mekim eth berithi eth kem. And I, behold I, if you want to do hene plus the pronominal suffix ni, this is standard imminent future. I, yes, the emphasis on the pronoun here, I am about to make, with hene and the participle mekim, that's the hifil participle of kum, that literally means to rise, hifil, raise, instant transitive goes to transitive or cause to rise, but used distinctively with covenant formulation, especially also in Genesis 17, where God establishes the covenant of circumcision. It may have not so much the sense of initiate, but sort of now raise up or come full circle. And it's interesting, if you go back in the narrative to 6:18, when God says before the flood that he is going to set his covenant, and the whole, he's sort of anticipating this in advance of the flood, that in this whole process he will establish his covenant. If the covenant is that he's not going to do this again, then we know even going into the flood that this is kind of a one-time event. that's not sort of an afterthought, like, oh my gosh, what have I done? But it was sort of the plan from the very beginning in what God was doing here. So I'm going to establish my covenant with you, Ittikim, there's our it again, with you all, plural, and with your Zerah, your seed, Achrikim, after you. The seed is just quite literally, or in this case, chronologically, after you. And eth with, now here the eighth looks the same as the direct object marker, but we know it's the preposition because that's the way it's being used. And with every nephesh, literally, this is a little awkward, every nephesh of the chaya, every life of the living thing, and probably adjectival, and with every living, chaya is the adjective, living, and with every living nephesh, being, which is with you. So again, it's you together with all creatures. And then he switches to Beth, and I don't have a good explanation. I didn't research this throughout all commentaries, but and most of them ignore these kinds of sort of nitty-gritty details of the actual translation. But he's been using it and with, and now he sort of summarizes with Beth. That is, could be the Beth of among the Oph. Oph is simply generic fowl, flying things. And among the behema, the big beasts, these are all sort of code for the stuff in the flies and the stuff that's large animals, just sort of representative of all. And bekol kayath haaretz itikim, and with every living thing, again, and with all the life, living thing, really, of the earth, itikim. And now we come circle back to the with you. Together with you. Dr. Arend emphasized that that's really the German translation. I think in our English translations of the first article explanation, it's God has made me and all creatures, right? But it's really me together with. And that's very much the force of this Ittikim, together with you. Where am I? At the, I lost my place. At the end of verse 10, is that where we are? With you, from all that are going out of the ark, all the way to all the living things of the earth. I think that's sort of a merismus. Everything going out in the earth and everything from the ark, and then into extending again to everything that follows after all the living things of the earth. By the way, this isn't terribly significant for this particular text, but the word for teva is kind of odd and really means, well, ark. We're stuck with this old English translation of ark. I want to make 2 points. One, this is relatively rare and really used only here and one other place, and secondly, is different from the word for box or ark of the covenant. Both of those got translated by the old English ark. And people don't necessarily realize that ark simply means a big box. To call it the ark, the box of the covenant, just doesn't have the same ring that we learned from King James. But there you have it. But this is a different word. And what's interesting is the only other place that this is used is in Exodus with the little box that they put Moses in the river. That was sort of a life-giving ark. You know, Peter picks up on this, 1 Peter 3, the whole typology of the flood. And by the way, that's a whole theological construct that's probably worth thinking about with this pericope, both with the flood in Genesis and with the stilling of the storm in Mark, that water is, you know, at one and the same time, a means of destruction and a means of salvation. If you indulge a personal story, one of the best sermons I ever preached was one I didn't prepare. It was the dead of August in 1993. They usually let the SEM prof in our church preach in the dog days of August. And it was the weekend in which the levee broke and the 93 flood took over the Chesterfield Valley. We spent all day Saturday watching the waters rise. It was just stunning. And I literally walked into a Saturday night church, and then Sunday morning, I literally walked in the pulpit and said, we got to talk about this. and I threw out the sermon I prepared and just winged something about the destructive and salvific power of water. Finally linking creation and the chaos of water theme in the flood to God's use of water in the most sort of uncommon way, not by might, not by power, but by a few drops of water in holy baptism. And that's 1 Peter 3, where Peter kind of, baptism, which now saves you, you see. And he sort of appeals to this thing. And in that sense, both the flood and the ark that floated on the water, both for Noah and for Moses, is really a medium, a means of salvation and of grace in the midst of the chaos of water. Wow, I just thought of this. You could also go to all the nautical typology in church construction. Why do we call, nobody says this anymore, but why do we call the main part of the church the nave? Because of the ship imagery of the church as sort of a means of salvation amidst the chaos of the world around us. That would be another aside, come to think of it, and this whole sort of understanding of the biblical understanding of the one true God sort of trumping the mythology of the hero gods needing to control the chaos of water, which is still a biblical theme. You have the chaos of water, but this isn't the eternal fight between Baal and Yam, or that you get in Canaanite and ancient Near Eastern mythology. You sort of have the creator God who made the whole thing in the first place, nevertheless showing his power as the creator who made it all, over all things. And this circles back to the rainbow business, because the rainbow is also a war bow. And the sign of sort of the military, if you will, or the power in the bow as that which conquers one's enemies, even though that's sort of deeply rooted in ancient mythology, is nevertheless a legitimate biblical theme if you get creation and the one true God right, that God still has power over this. Who is this that even wind and sea obey him? See, now we're back to Mark. Well, I digress. We're back to translation. Did we finish verse 11? No, that was 10, 11. And Hekimothi, I will raise up. Nice hifil of kum. Perfect, with the helping holom. You may remember that hollows in the hifil can have a helping holom, hekimothi, and I will establish my bereath, my covenant with you, and not will be cut off all flesh ever again from, the from is awkward, I bet you most English put up because of, the waters of the Mabul. Now that's the word for flood. And again, it's only used here. I think there's one reference in Psalms somewhere, but it's clearly a reference to the flood. It's not real sure what the etymology of this is, not that that'd be terribly helpful. There is a verb, naval, that means to be caused or be dead or destroyed. It's really not clear. Anyway, it's a word for flood. From the waters of the flood, and not will be again a flood, to shakate, that's the pl infinitive of shakat, destroy, to destroy the Eretz. Verse 12, and Elohim said, Zoth oath, this is a sign, no, the sign of the covenant, construct chain, this is the sign of the covenant which I am giving, baini, between me and between you. Remember that in Hebrew you always do something between and between. So you repeat the between. Between me and you, and between all the living being which is with you. So again, this sort of collective sense of you and all other creatures with you. Le doroth olam. Dor is the word for generations. To generations of olam, perpetuity is really my preferred translation for olam. As long as generations endure, it doesn't really mean forever in the eternity sense, which is really not as much a Hebrew concept, but for all generations, for time to come. That might be a good paraphrase of Olam. 13, and Keshet Kashti, a nice segulate noun with a pronominal suffix. Keshet goes to Kashti, and my bow I will give, note the use of Nathan here, I will put her place, in the cloud. Boy, beginning Hebrew, definite article, pathak dagish forte, except when there's a guttural in which it's comets, except when it depends which guttural you have, and then you get that other little rule that before a certain gutturals like ion, followed by a comets, an unaccented comets, it goes to segol. You don't have to remember a word I just said, but that's one of those fine points of pointing the definite article, that it goes to segol. So you get be-anan and be-anen, and here is a place where it actually happens, in the cloud. And so back to the translation. And my bow I will put in my cloud, and it will be, the bow is feminine, hayatha is feminine, it will be as a sign, or it will become a sign of covenant, a covenant, a sign of covenant between me and between the earth, the aretz, the whole shooting match. This is creator, creation, creator, all creatures, including the creation language. And it will be bit on the knee. Now, this puzzled me because on the knee should simply be my cloud. And I looked this up, and they cite one instance in which anan is used in the PL, not for the noun cloud, but as a verb to, I don't know what the verb for cloud is, becloud something? And they cite this text. It is pointed as a PL infinitive construct, although you should have a dagish forte in the middle nun. You can argue that leaves once in a while with the vocal schwa under it. So here you have it. I think this is the trouble is the word anan that follows it, which is clearly a direct object, it seems. So and the idiom of it will be in my doing something with an infinitive construct is standard idiom. So what do we have here? And it will happen when I cloud a cloud upon the earth. And near atha is nifal of ra'ah, to be seen or appear. The subject is hakeshet, the bow. And the bow will appear or be seen in the cloud. So first you get a cloud, then you get the bow in the cloud. Kind of interesting when you think about it. I'm not sure how this all works because rainbows actually work when the sun is going through a cloud. So you need the sun behind it as well. But then I will remember my covenant, which is between me and between you and between all living things, all living beings, and among all flesh. Okay, what's odd here is that it's God that remembers. I mean, I don't know, everybody kind of reads this passage and assumes it's about me. I'm supposed to see the cloud or the rainbow, but God's supposed to see the rainbow and remember. It's almost a striking anthropomorphism, as though God needs to be reminded of his own covenant. Now, he isn't saying it in that sense. He's just kind of, he gets to do whatever he wants. So I'll make the covenant, I'll make the rainbow, and when I see it, I'll remember, okay? It's kind of my own way of doing this. If I remember correctly, I'm circling back to the whole JDP question. This is, in JDP theory, clearly a P text. And this is one of the most striking anthropomorphisms you're going to find. P doesn't use anthropomorphisms. P has a transcendent God. J uses anthropomorphisms. So it's one of those sort of oddball things that's sometimes a little bit of a smoking clue that maybe the JDP stuff doesn't work as neat and tidy as everybody thinks it might. That's kind of a cheap shot, I suppose. But anyway, I remember my covenant, which is between all flesh, and not will be again the waters belonging to a flood to destroy all flesh. 16. Any questions there? I think I got all that. Those are pretty much words we've already done. 16. And the bow will be in the cloud, and I will see it. again, it's kind of for God's benefit. And I will see it, the ha there at the end of re'ithi ha is object suffix, her, the subject, or the bull, which is feminine, as or to remember, lizkor, infinitive construct, to remember the perpetual covenant between God and between all living nephesh, amongst all the flesh which is upon the earth. Well, again, sort of a way of encompassing everything. Okay, finally, verse 17 wraps it up, almost an inclusio with verse 9, where he talked about establishing the sign or the covenant. And God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant which I will kum, hifil, heki, mothi, I will raise up between me and between all flesh which is upon the earth. There you go. Any questions? We don't have a large crowd here, but I hope that's helpful. Again, circling back, the obvious theme here, to connect this to the gospel, is the one who is Lord and ultimate creator and Lord of even the nature world, including the powers of water. And you can just do a lot with that theme, whether it's flooding in August or not. So thank you.
Thank you.
I think we're done.
Pick some ideas.